All right, well, welcome to this presentation on post-pandemic long-term mortality in Australia. I'm Ari Odysseus. I'll be chairing the session today by Philip Clark. So Philip is a consultant with Azuria Partners, specialising in longevity and retirement. Formerly working in longevity research for a multinational organisation in the UK, Philip now supports clients in maximising the value of retirement income through tailored strategies and integrate optimisation of individual retirement income, mortality assumptions, and longevity risk management. He has published several papers on longevity and continues to contribute to thought leadership in this rapidly evolving world. Now, I was lucky enough to chair Philip's session last year, which was excellent, and he's definitely got some good insights and thoughts around this. And he was the Melville Prize winner for the best paper presented at last year's session. So I'm looking forward to this. So thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Ari, for the introduction. So good on you for doing that 2 years in a row. Thank you again. And it's always a pleasure to be introduced by a score, being myself a French actuary, so there's a little bit of connection here. So it's good to have you again this year. So I'm going to present on post-pandemic mortality trend in Australia. And this project is part of a larger project or series of projects that we have developed at Azuria on maximizing the value of retirement income. At Azuria, this is the raison d'être of what we do in retirement, to maximize income. And one such project has been around optimal allocation between different sources of income, like age pension, account-based pension, longevity product, in order to maximize the total income within what I call the individual risk tolerance of the retiree. And another big project has been around mortality assumptions. And here I present some work on post-pandemic mortality. So can we do better in terms of mortality projections for the benefit of the retiree? And Ari, if I start getting too long, remind me when there's only a few minutes left for questions. We can all agree that COVID-19 has disrupted a mortality trend worldwide. And Australian media has published articles that were quite dramatic, such as Australia's life expectancy has fallen again and dropped in global rankings. And there has been a few of such headlines, and every time they include the peak pandemic years. And I've always felt they were a little bit sensational considering the reality of Australian mortality, which is still very good. But nonetheless, actuaries may rightfully wonder what to do about the newly published Australian life tables that came out last December. And thank you, the Office of the Australian Government Actuary for that. How biased are those tables, considering the fact they include COVID excess mortality? And how do we strip out this excess mortality? So these are the sort of questions that I'm going to try and answer. But before I answer that, so I went around and looked at what other institutes and actuarial bodies have done around the world. So I've got them in three categories. So the level of engagement in terms of mortality projections considering COVID. So you have those with no response, so those bodies who didn't do much. And often it's just because their reason, the private exposure to long-term longevity, that really justifies much engagement. Then those in the middle, the limited response. So mortality trend is an issue, but the profession hasn't done much. Well, they have engaged, and this is typically North America, both in the US and in Canada. They have engaged with a post-pandemic trend. In Canada, the Institute released a paper last year, which is quite comprehensive on mortality projections. But they have said there isn't enough data to go beyond the pandemic. So they still rely on pre-pandemic data for their projections, both in the US and in Canada. And so those institutes that actually use the pandemic data, so starting in 2020, and include the data in their models. So as far as I know, there's only two of those institutes, the Dutch and the British. So the Dutch, what they do is that they have taken the pre-pandemic trend, they've applied a shock on this trend, and the shock is tapered down 25% every year, and that's the equivalent of a 2.4 half-life of the mortality shock. And so they use pre-pandemic data, and on top of that, they add a shock to account for the excess mortality gradually tapering down. And the institute that really engaged with this issue is the UK's institute. And what they did, so initially they continued the same process with their existing CMI model, which is mortality projection model. But at first, they were using 0% weighting on calendar year 2020, 2021. And that's how they first dealt with the issue, excluding those years. And then 2022, 2023, so they thought, oh, we need to do something else now. And so they added some weighting of those calendar years, so 15% weighting on 2022, 2023. So that way they kept the continuity of the method. But the problem was it was becoming more and more artificial. So what they were really doing is that they had a target in mind. They had a H-standardized mortality target in mind, and they were kind of adjusting the parameters on the model in order to reach that target. So you can imagine that it doesn't satisfy anyone, and that it can become very contrived. Like, so how do you come up with this 15% weighting on calendar year 2023? It's just because we believe this particular trajectory is the correct one. So the new approach with the UK's institute that is was under review until recently, and that is getting wide approval in the industry, is this new approach with a NIN-built shock model in the CMI model. So the shock is fitted within the model, and it's not an external input like the Dutch model. And all years of the calendar are included 100%. So the model allows for a shock that tapers down with an exponential decay with a half-life of 1 year. And I realize I'm going into actuarial techniques about modeling projections and all that. And my wife says these sort of things like listening to a long joke, but there's no punchline. Sorry about that. So I've looked at these different approaches. But then the real question for me was around what to do with the Australian mortality projections. So I will present the challenge to you. So the challenge is that, as I said, we have the new Australian life tables, and they follow a well-established methodology. They are updated every 5 years, and they set the mortality rates and improvement factors. So it's a process that has served us well over the years. However, this time around, the observation periods happen to coincide with an unusually volatile period. So not just regular normal volatility of mortality, but a pandemic that was global. And so you have those 3 years observation period in the ALT that include this excess mortality. So what do we do with that? Can we use the ALT without worrying too much? And for the So here I show those 3 years. So 2020 up to 2022, the dots, that's the actual experience in mortality in the general population. And you see how they go up. And for the purpose of longevity pricing, so typically actuaries, when they don't have the experience, they would use X percent of the ALT, so a select factor applied to the ALT. But the issue is that the ALT has that excess mortality. And so there's a real question around how to use the ALT in this context. To find a comparable health crisis in Australia, so no improvements for 4 years, you have to go back to the 1960s, a time of no mortality improvement. And the main reason for that issue in the 1960s was the rise of smoking-related diseases. And so it's quite an exceptional time period we've lived the last few years. And the government actuary, Guy Thornburn, wrote recently in the Actuaries Digital, the ALT has not been adjusted for the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. So we get what we get. And towards the end of the article, I remind practitioners that the adoption of future mortality improvement factors is a matter of actuarial judgment. So good luck to you actuaries. The government actuary is not a prophet that will tell you about future mortality. He's not an actuary or Nostradamus, this French astrologer who predicted a great plague. So we need judgment. So how do we remove the COVID-19 distortion from the ALT table, the ALT, so that we can use them? So I could go straight to the answer because this is what the paper is about. And I encourage you to read the paper. I could go straight to the answer, but so I need to make you wait a little bit. And we're going to talk about the retrospective mortality improvements in the ALT 2020 and 2022 and what they are made of. So sorry to keep waiting. Sorry for the wait. But we will talk about life expectancy. So this is delayed gratification at the moment. You didn't know you were going to have to wait, and there could be delayed gratification in this presentation. But there is. Talking about delayed gratification in 2021, I went on a big trip to visit my parents in France, except that on the way I got in contact with someone who had COVID. And so my family and I, we couldn't risk bringing the virus. So we isolated in their granny flats and we had the kids with us, and was delayed gratification for my parents because they really, really wanted to see their grandkids, but they had to wait while we isolated in their granny flat. But my wife had the best holiday because she didn't have to talk to my parents and endure the jokes. And she had a great time in France. Retrospective Australian mortality improvements. So in the publication last December, you will find the 25-year average improvements and the 125-year average improvement. And they are to be applied, they're applicable to the mortality rates. And as you see, so you have the monotonous lines there in yellow, so that's the 125 improvements. So they kind of reduce on average as you get older. And then you have the green curved, so this wavy curve, which is the 25-year average mortality improvements. And as you see, they're a lot more irregular. And then on the right hand side, you have the contribution by causes. So that's the age standardized death rate for the 65 plus, and you see the different contributions to the overall reduction. So the main contribution is the circulatory disease. So that's heart disease, which explains, say, 90% of the mortality improvements over the last 25 years. You have the reduction in cancer. So cancer tend to reduce steadily, regularly, but slowly. Then you have the respiratory disease, which is an area where progress is slow as well, because these are people who are very frail, so it gets harder and harder to treat them. And then on the other side, so you have the adverse contribution of COVID-19 and dementia. So with dementia, so you see it's an adverse contribution to the improvement. So more people dying of dementia, but actually, it's not necessarily bad, because A, you have better diagnosis of dementia, and B, you have a lot of older people, so 85 plus, who would have died of heart disease, but because they live longer, now they reach the age where they can be affected by dementia. So it might sound like bad news that there's more dementia, but it's only because you see these displacements from heart disease to dementia, meaning people are overall living longer. This is another way to look at mortality improvements, and this time by age group. And so the line here, that's the total improvement by age group, with the largest improvements between age 65 and 75. So the contributions, that's the colors. So for younger people, so in this area, age around 50, reduction in cancer death is the most important contribution to mortality improvements. For the older people, heart disease or circulatory disease is the most important contribution to mortality improvements. And then you see there, the 85 plus, a number of other causes of death, COVID-19, dementia, metabolic, which are adversely, so increasing in terms of the number of deaths, but actually a sign that more and more people are reaching those ages. So let's move on. Mortality improvements. So it's something that is interesting to see. We're still looking at the 25-year averages because it's more often what people use in their life expectancy projections. So I made this point last year, and I made this point again this time. And that's because with the new life tables that from 2020, 2022, we have an additional curve. It's that the age of largest improvements tend to shift. So every 5 years, the point or the age with the largest mortality improvement moves by 5 years. So the shape of the curve moves with the periods. And the largest improvements are not attached to an age. They are actually attached to a cohort. And it's something in the Australian mortality trend is this cohort component, which is entrenched. So every time you get the new numbers from the Australian government actuary, you see that shifts in the shape of the curve. This is the cohort effect. And these cohort effects need to be captured in mortality projections. So that's the heat map. I would hope most of you are familiar with heat maps. So they show the speed of mortality improvements by year and age. So the dark orange is the more rapid improvements. And in mortality projections, we have two different effects, the period effects. So these are improvements that depend on a particular period. And we have the cohort effects, so improvements that depend on a particular year of birth. And cohort effects are often linked to changes in changing lifestyles, for example, smoking prevalence or changes in society, and they are visible with the diagonals. But I would suspect you already know that. In the developed countries, there's a big effect around the golden cohorts. So this dark diagonal, there were people born in the 1930s, came after the big recession, but before the war, they had expanded healthcare, better access to education. They were worked during a period where it was a lot easier to climb the social ladder. They were able to buy themselves a nice house with one wage of a teacher. And this generation enjoyed improvements throughout their lifestyle, throughout their lifetime, as opposed to the new cohort of retirees. So if you are 65 today, born in 1960, you identify as a late baby boomer. You're on the light diagonal. That's saying that you're seeing slow mortality improvements. And these effects will have to be captured in the model. Now, moving on to recent experience. So again, the dots are the actual age standardized death rates since 2015, and the ALT line. So this is the age standardized mortality using the ALT, and then it's extrapolated left and right either side using the 25-year average improvements. So the ALT line, as you can see, and that mostly above the actual rates before 2022, because there's a distortion happening there in the ALT with the excess mortality in the ALT. And after that, the ALT line falls below the actual experience, and that's because there's still residual excess mortality up to last year, and well, we don't know about 2025, but there's still excess mortality due to COVID. And Australia successfully delayed the peak mortality through vaccination, buying time for people to get immunized before exposure. But the problem is vaccination provides only temporary immunity. And we see that immunity is waning and means older people are still exposed to the risk of COVID. With vaccination uptake actually going down every year. So this is another thing to consider when doing mortality projections. So a continuation of the entrenched cohort effects and the shock of COVID-19, which we expect will fade away as it has in other countries. So we expect that Australia, who was late in the pandemic, will continue to see excess mortality for a few years. And the ALT 2022, the tables that were released in December, they don't really consider all these effects. And this is why, in order to do forward-looking projections, we need a model that includes those features, includes the entrenched cohort effect, and includes the temporary transient COVID-19 effects. Well done if you are still listening, because we're getting to the interesting bit. So having described Australian mortality improvements and their features, we introduced the forward-looking approach, which I called the cohort-linked Australian improvement rates, the CLARES. They are modeled using an APCI stochastic model for death rates, which has been the best practice globally, and with a mortality shock in the model that decays exponentially. And so the very recent feedback in the UK has been, yes, this is a great approach for capturing the effects of COVID-19. And you see, so the dots are still the actual experience, and the yellow line, the green lines are the fitted projections of those mortality rates. The formula, so if you're into longevity projections, maybe you've seen these sort of formulas before. So the difference compared to last year is the exponential decaying mortality shock. Why is it 0.5? So that's to talk about the half-life of the shock, and the half-life is 1.5 years. And why is it longer than elsewhere? It's because, so that's based on the more recent excess death publication that the mortality working group presented not long ago. And so I used that to kind of calibrate the half-life of the mortality shock. But as you might say, there's a level of uncertainty there, and I'll come back to it. So this is the interesting bit about the results. So firstly, the table on the left, you see the average improvements. So on the left, it's the ALT 25-year average retrospective improvements. And then next to it, it's the results. So starting from the ALT 2020-2022 and targeting the results of the model. So as you see for males, so the 25 average was 1.8% reduction every year. And the approach using the CLARES improvements give us a result of 1.1% reduction every year. So you see, the slight difference, and for females, the gap is a little bit smaller, and it's typical as female mortality has tended to be more stable in the last 50 years. In terms of, life expectancies, so you see the life expectancies here. So the top one, ALT 2015-2017 with 25-year average improvements. So these are the numbers that I showed last year using the previous ALTs. And now the equivalent with the newly released ALTs, so it's just slightly under for males and basically the same for females. Then last year, I presented the APCI up to 2020, so pre-pandemic projections. So 21.3, which was slightly lower than the 25-year average improvements were showing. So I had some complaints last year. I had some complaints from mostly newly retired actuaries saying it wasn't really nice of me reducing their life expectancy like this. So I'm really sorry, but the good news is that the pandemic impact is only very limited this time around.
So going from 21.3 to 21.2. And that's because, you remember, in the formula, there's an exponential decay. It's because most actuaries working on longevity projections believe that by the end of this decade, most of the excess mortality will have disappeared. So there's still an impact for older retirees, so age 75 plus, but for younger retirees, and especially when you're pricing for an annuity with a death benefit, where with the death benefit for the next 10, 15 years, really the mortality today doesn't really matter that much. So it means that the overall impact of this pandemic on young retirees is actually very limited. So end of the story, back to my granny flat holiday. So we did COVID tests, and after two negative results, we emerged triumphantly. So no COVID, we were all good to go. And everyone was very happy. We could enjoy our holiday. And then my dad, so we were shielding him all this time. He went to the table tennis club. He's got his own age category there, the 80 plus. He's probably the only one in that age category. So he went to the club, and on the way back, his kind heart, he offered a lift home to someone, and just happened that this person had COVID. So this is how I was in contact again with COVID, except this time through my dad, I caught it. So this is how. So my dad was not just exchanging ping pong balls at the club; he was exchanging infectious viruses as well. So this is how I got a first-hand experience with COVID. Caveats. Oh yeah, I've got a few caveats. So post-pandemic mortality trend. So this is a tool that helps us find plausible trajectories within the context of what we know and with the data we have. But it doesn't answer all the questions we might have. One question could be about this half-life parameter. And there might be more questions around mortality projections. But this is a tool to allow us to think and to come up with rational methodologies for post-pandemic mortality projections. So Australia has been very effective at containing the pandemic at the beginning. And this model assumes it takes longer to get to the other side of the pandemic compared to other countries where it came more suddenly, and then it was also gone. In some countries, we can say it's already a past pandemic. In Australia, we don't have the same hindsight. We're a little bit behind, so it's difficult to make definitive conclusions at this stage. Key takeaways. So I hope you can read the paper. It's available on the app. So the key takeaway. So really, one of the challenges has been what to do with the ALT in this context when they include this excess mortality, and how can we use them if we want to remove that distortion. The ALT 2022. So they provide a retrospective snapshot, but I also wanted to show what they include, so illustrates how for what particular causes we've seen those improvements, and the questions behind that is that can we expect that will continue in the future? And the introduction of the cohort-linked Australian improvement rates, the CLAIRs, that captures the entrenched cohort effects and the transient COVID-19 excess mortality. Well, thank you very much. And
thank you.
Happy to take any question.
Thank you, Philip. That is really insightful. I appreciate all the work that you've done to present that today. We've got a question off the bat. If you just want to use the microphone, there's nothing on the app, so please just feel free to ask questions.
Okay, Richard Lyon. I'm on the mortality subcommittee. I've had a bit of a chat with Philip, but we are coming at this from different perspectives. We are historical, like the AGA. I want to put in a plug for Insight Session on the 10th, I think it is, of July, where we'll present the experience up to the end of 2024. But meanwhile, can I get you to go back to your chart, Philip, where you've got your Claire and the, that's it, that's the one.
Yeah.
It's a little bit difficult to see. Have you got does that one have the ALT on it as well? I can't.
No, the ALT are not on this one.
Okay. Well, you need to imagine the ALT. The ALT kind of starts in the same top left-hand corner. If you just look at the males, starts about the same top left-hand corner, if I remember rightly, as your Claire.
Yeah.
But then it goes on a straight line through the middle of the bump and on down well below where things are going into the future, which means it's quite different. But that's obviously the recent ALT, and I'll suggest that there's a couple of reasons for that, one of which is obviously the bit of excess mortality that existed in 2020 to 2022. But the other much more important thing is it's a straight line.
Mm.
And if you look at your thing, and particularly the chart in your paper that's got the ALT on it, it's very clear that you've got a curve there. Mm. And I would suggest to you, it's not the COVID in your allowance, it's the curve that makes the difference in that life expectancy at age 65 plus.
Yeah, and yeah, I completely agree. For a 65-year-old, this bump there, that doesn't do much, really. It's only age 80 where COVID-19 would have a significant impact on life expectancy. And so to your point, so the curve there, so as you see, the actual experience is kind of, it's convex. The ALT improvements looks more like a straight line. So this model continues the convexity into the future, and which explains the difference in life expectancies. So I think it's mostly the law of diminishing returns. So every effort to increase life expectancy becomes more costly year after year.
Do we have more questions from the floor?
Thanks, Phil. Very, very interesting. In terms of 2020 and 2021 and the, I guess, negative excess mortality that might have existed, any thoughts there on allowance for that?
So I would say 2021 to me looks like a normal year. It's 2020 which has this lower than expected mortality. The model doesn't make an explicit, like you would say, oh, we'll do a wave instead of a shock. We could think about it, but, and you might say, oh, the shock is only bigger because you haven't, allowed for the low of 2020. It's possibly something that we could think about. I'm not sure that it would be much of a difference long term on life expectancies. But it could, like, for example, if you're doing experience investigations on retirees, that would be very useful, actually. But as far as I know, no one really does experience investigations on retirees because they don't have the data. Or if they do, I'm not aware of it.
We're almost out of time. We've got time for one more question, if anyone's got. I've got one for you, Phil. So putting it into a practical sense, so retirement incomes and retirement income solutions is such a topical subject at the moment, and we're all looking to develop solutions for retirees. The mortality improvement factor is such an important input into that, and you can get quite a wide range of outcomes depending on which model you use and how you forecast it. So what do you see us using as an industry, the output from your model in terms of developing solutions?
This APCI model was adopted in Canada. The American one is not too dissimilar. So to me, it's probably best practice. And then there's the issue of the mortality shock due to pandemic, which eventually in 5 years' time, it could well be that we don't need to model that anymore because it's gone through the wash. So I think a version of the APCI model will continue to be best practice. One key issue is the long-term rate. So that's the assumption of, after a number of years, 20 years plus, it converges to a long-term rate of improvements. But one issue we have in Australia is that when you take up an annuity today and you have a death benefit until life expectancy, which is quite different from what happens in the UK where it's just longevity. So this product design means that actually the long-term rates becomes more important than it was back in the UK, for example. And it becomes a lot more important than it should compared to the next 10 years of mortality, where you have that natural hedge between the death benefit and the longevity. And really, it doesn't really matter what you put. You could put any mortality assumptions. It wouldn't matter much, because it only starts to be important by the time you get to age, 75, 80.
Thank you. Okay, we're at the end of the session. If you haven't read the paper, highly recommend it. Go onto the app, have a look through it. But please put your hands together for Philip for an excellent presentation.
Thank you very much, Harry.